Into the Vertical Blanks Weekly Overscan, our new weekly retro classic gaming and nostalgia show, coming up next. Into the Vertical Blanks Retro Overscan, featuring this week's possibly below-the-radar retro and classic gaming news, as well as the discussion topic, is it really possible to be bored in 2024? So what is this we're doing today, Steve? What are we calling this?
We are making an attempt to do a weekly retro podcast. I know that's crazy.
A weekly retro podcast. And we're calling, what are we calling this?
The Overscan. Or the Weekly Overscan.
The Weekly Overscan? Do you, what does the Weekly Overscan mean? What does Overscan mean? Let's talk about what we created for Weekly Overscan, Steve. What did we create?
We created a PowerPoint or a Google slide deck.
A PowerPoint.
So this is the Overscan Weekly or the Weekly Overscan. So what is the Overscan? The overscan is when the margins of the picture are hidden beyond the borders of the screen, as if the picture is zoomed in. So I like the idea of overscan. It's related to the vertical blank a little bit. But the idea is, you know, there's lots of retro shows out there. They're all great. And I think our attempt is to find things that are outside the margins that don't necessarily get talked about. And that's what the overscan is. Welcome to the boardroom, because of course we made a PowerPoint presentation, so boardroom, get it? It's a really, really, really bad pun, I know. It's a dad joke. Yes. Okay, this is only going to last for 1 week. The boardroom is only going to last for 1 week.
Next up is Atari Beyond Lunar Lander. It's available now for the Switch, the Xbox, Steam, PlayStation, Epic's Game Store, the Epic Game Store, and on the Atari VCS. Let's take a look at a preview of it from the site.
It began with the moon.
That looks like Lunar Lander. This looks like a modern game.
Engaging thrusters.
That's cool.
Captain, I see something.
What does Lunar Lander look like to you?
It looks a lot like Oids by FTL.
Yeah, it looks like a Super Oids game.
Yeah, it looks really good. I'm kind of excited that they did a new, and it has a story with it and stuff like that. So it looks really cool. I've not bought it yet, but I do plan to at least take a look at it. There's almost too much stuff to buy from Atari these days, so it makes it kind of hard.
What I want is Atari to deliver the things I ordered before I order any more.
Well, that's in here, so don't. Why are you ruining our presentation?
I'm not ruining your presentation. Okay, so next up is the book that I received this book last week, the Curious Video Game Machines by Lewis Packwood. Curious Video Game Machines by Lewis Packwood. The first story is by Chris Crawford, which is really cool. This is a great book. It's like the history. It's like the alternative history of video games, basically.
Yeah, I love this. I have it downstairs, and I turned to the first chapter. I'm like, oh my god, it's this really interesting story about Chris Crawford making this Tanktics physical hardware, you know, game in like the 70s. I'm like, it's just incredible. So. I agree. This is a really, really interesting book. A lot of stuff that I've never seen before that I can't wait to get into.
It's not taking me to it for some reason. I'm alone. I've not read much of it yet, but it came. It's hardcover. It's a really nice item to have.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
But I haven't got too far into this yet. So let's go to the next one. The next one is also a book. It is.
Yes, this is just announced. Did you see this?
The Zaffin Books Jaguar book, 220 pages. You can pre-order now. I think that yeah, is. I can actually we'll put go that to this
in
link.
in the notes because it's it looks really awesome.
Pre-orders open now. Let's read a little bit about it. Full history of the Jaguar, review of all officially released games, and then hardware, interviews, resources, and more. This looks like a winner, right? Yeah, this looks like a great book. I think we'll get the notes for this book into the, the link to this book into the notes. Let's go.
The free book is called Clipped Claws.
And then this other book is interesting. I have this book, The Claws.
When did you get it?
I downloaded it when I was doing my Jaguar. I did a Jaguar video on Raiden, and I used this book for some information on Raiden.
Well, this is like a 500-page Jaguar history book.
Yeah. It's free.
That's free. It's incredible. It's incredible. I haven't even had a chance to take a look at it, but I paged through it. I'm like, oh my God, the amount of information in this thing is incredible. But it's also free, so we should put that link.
And this one's not by Zaffin. This is not by Zaffin.
Boris. Boris Ketzinger.
Fantastic looking book. I read through that. I used it for some reference on a couple things. Just an amazing, amazing book.
What's this?
This is a homebrew game for the Atari 7800.
Atari 7800 looks amazing.
By Paul Lay and Harvey Kong Tin, I think. He does sound and other things for him. Dreadnought Assault. Paul Lay created a demo of like the Atari 7800 horizontal shooter that just rocked a couple years ago, and he finally made it into a game.
Oh, that's awesome.
This is...
Oh, it looks beautiful.
It's like Atari Blast horizontal for the 7800.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, 7800 still remains untapped, I think.
Yes.
For what you can do with it. I think people are just starting to do it now, which is great. This is awesome.
It's actually a combo of Iridium and a bunch of other games together, and Dreadnought Factor, plus, you know, R-Type. Pretty awesome. Okay.
So this is a demo. Do we know when the game is coming out? How much it's going to be?
Nothing about it that I know yet. There's an... all that it said is being worked on right now by Paul Lay. That's it.
Well, it looks awesome, and it deserves a purchase if it exists.
100%. This is a cartridge purchase to play in the 2600 Plus and the 7800. 100%.
Oh yeah, I love that that the 2600 Plus can play these games now too.
Dreadnought Assault. Okay, let's go back. So great, this is too. A game called Mickey. For the Atari 8-bit, it is a, the Konami arcade game Mickey came out in 1984. There was a version of this game that came out for like the BBC Micro and a bunch of computers in the UK and the Spectrum. They changed the original, the original thing was kind of risque. So they changed it to be like just a teenager in school before. It was like a workplace, like, some sort of workplace business style, almost dating sim. They changed it for this to be like a game where you're trying to one up the popular girl in school. And they put it out for the Atari, make it for the Atari 8-bit. And they have a little video that like sort of presents the different versions of it here. So
just take a look. What if this is something we can buy in a cartridge? Disc. I did see this, and I was wondering what it was, because it looks odd, but I'm kind of excited about how cool it looks.
Yes. And so that one looks really, really, really interesting. And I can't wait for that to come out for the Atari 8-bit.
There's no information again. It's
They're not. They're just making it, right? So the next
I was very excited about this. Oscar Toledo, who made the program games for the Atari 2600 game last year, has been working on a ColecoVision Basic with the ColecoVision Basic compiler and a book about programming games for the ColecoVision, and it looks like awesome. Like it's Oscar Toledo coming through again, with just making some really cool stuff.
So he's the one who wrote the 2600 assembly language book, right?
Yes, yeah. And if you play the video here, you can see it's kind of a cool lead. He's making a cool looking kind of RPG for the ColecoVision. But I mean, the whole point is it's a ColecoVision Basic, so a little kind of pseudo 3D game and dungeon crawl. I mean these are like the dream is to make an RPG on these old consoles. But
okay, Scald.
So this is my exciting thing for the week. Scald Against the Black Pyre is a new retro-themed RPG coming to Steam, and it's really themed like a 90s DOS game. I'm very excited about it. It's you can get a demo of it now. When you play it, it feels like Ultima 7, but with like ad lib music. I don't know how to explain it. If you're into like DOS gaming or late era ST Amiga plus and then DOS gaming, it's really good. You want to play the video? Play a little bit of the video?
Yeah. But
legacies of old about to be awakened.
Looks awesome. I mean, I can't wait to buy it. So
it's
like a classic RPG.
It's coming to Steam and GOG on May and Good Old Games on May 30th. It looks like to me like Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance.
I mean it's much earlier than that though.
You know what I mean? Like as good as that though. As good as that.
Yeah, it does. It looks really fun.
This is my excitement of the week. My excitement of the week is that we figured out...
For just a note, Scald the Black Pyre thing was my excitement of the week.
Mandarin became Europress. Europress merged in to Hasbro. Hasbro sold to Infograms. Infograms became Atari. Atari owns Stoss and Amos, basically. So
that's really interesting.
Anyway, there's a discussion of it on the Facebook page for Stoss, where there's a lot of people making games for the ST on there, which is kind of cool. And that was my excitement of the week because
that is awesome because Atari may actually own them. They have no idea if they own them.
They don't have any idea about that for sure.
And even if they did, those guys don't know what they own. So, right. But it'd be really cool if they realized they did own it and they could do something with the Stoss games or
like games that people created or print. Put out like a game creator based on it. Like you can make ST or Amiga games you can put on. I mean, on the Atari, I don't know anything, right? Like, yeah, there's all kinds of cool stuff they could do. That was exciting.
It's fun, actually. It's a really fun idea that they own it. So,
okay, we're going to share this one. This is the XP shipping updates. So, Steve, what happened here?
Well, we finally got Atari finally sent out an email to update the XP orders from last August for Mr. Run and Jump, and they said that we will get another update in 60 to 90 days. So they should ship in 60 to 90 days, but like they said that 60 to 90 days ago and 60 to 90 days before that. I would say that this was a big sort of F up on whoever was making these things for Atari, whoever was shipping them, whoever did this for Atari. They need to fix this.
There's a hole somewhere, right?
There's a hole somewhere, and if they're going to be making cartridges and marketing them for the 2600 Plus or whatever they do next, they're going to have to fix this problem with people buying stuff and it being almost a year before they get it.
So
I know Limited Run Games kind of has the same thing going on, but I mean, if they want to make this real, they're going to have to figure out a better way to do it.
That's right. All. And this may coincide with the next thing that I'm going to show about Atari Age. But what if the original producer of these games only did the first few, and then Albert is tasked with doing all these behind the scenes and no one knows, and he has all of his other ones to do too, and that's why they're not coming out?
It could be, you know, now that they own Atari Age.
People have lost faith in Atari because a lot of orders went out for things like Ninja Golf, Fatal Run, and the 700 Euro Pad. We both purchased those in January.
Yeah, so supposedly they ship in May, and that's to now we're May. So hopefully they'll ship in May, and they'll restore faith in Atari's ability to build and ship things. But if it becomes another another Mr. Run and Jump problem where the XP carts keep getting pushed out and out and out, it's going to be really disappointing. So we will see. They could restore faith. It's possible. We'll find out.
This other thing right here, Atari Age shipping. Albert has been sending emails to everyone who ordered from the last chance to buy these non-licensed ports, right? So non-licensed ports that should have had licenses. I purchased last year, I think it was either Gorf or Wizard of War and an Atari Vox, along with many other people about a year ago. I mean, roughly a year ago. He's still way behind, it seems to me. And he said he's working on it. He's going to be new shells. They're going to have new flash-based boards. A lot of things are going to speed up, they're going to move the store to Spotify, all these things.
Spotify?
They're going to move the store to Shopify, but all these things. But realistically, this seems to be the same problem as Mr. Run and Jump. Maybe it's just a coincidence, but
I think it's a coincidence. Okay. I don't think it had anything to do with the two.
Yeah.
I think this is Atari Age's own backup, probably maybe based on similar manufacturing issues of getting parts.
Maybe so.
But, you know, from wherever they're getting them from. But it's similar, but I don't think it's the same. I think it's the running into the same issue. You know, it may be, maybe, you know, they may be a victim of their own success, and that's just too much to do, which is unfortunate, right? But still not great, because it makes it so, it really sort of stifles the community a little
and
bit.
And the progress. Everything was going so well. Like things by external partners, the hardware that's coming, those are all coming out really well. But when Atari is responsible for it at the moment, you can see the cracks in the armor. The wizard behind the curtain is not there, right? They don't have the capacity to be putting out these cartridges, and I'm sure there's so little money in them that they need to put them out themselves, not pay for someone else to do it.
Well, especially when they keep announcing new other things, right? Like they announced the new Yar's Revenge game by WayForward, and they announced this Lunar Lander game, and they announced they're bringing Infogrames back. All this stuff is cool, but it makes you kind of say, hey, wait a minute, you know, you guys were selling us this other stuff. You haven't even really come through on that yet. And now you're announcing all these other directions you're going and doing things. And, you know, it sort of feels like, you know, we old Atari fans got excited about what they were doing. We sent them our money.
Right.
We basically crowdfunded their ability to do all these other things that have nothing to do with it.
Right.
And now the things that we liked are being left behind or not being fulfilled upon. And then they're going and doing all this other stuff that has to do with more modern gaming. And it's fine. Like, I like the modern stuff. I think it's cool. But not at the expense of us all sending them checks and them not fulfilling their obligations. So that's what it feels a little like. Whenever I see a new thing that they're doing, I'm like, guys, please finish what you started on the other side and get it done.
I agree. We worked with WayForward a little bit in the past.
Yeah, we did. So WayForward used to be they did some games for a company we worked for like 20 years ago. So I like their stuff. They're a good company. They have good reputation. It's cool that Atari is working with them on a Yar's Revenge game. It's really neat. I hope that's like a really good move for them. But it still kind of makes me feel like I wish they would finish what they started on the other side too.
Of course. So let's move away from that to what's been going on our YouTube channel, Steve. What have we been trying to cover over there?
Oh, lots of stuff, Jeff. What's the first slide say on our boardroom slideshow?
I'll bring it up just a second.
So we have in our continuing series about games that are possibly worse than E.T., there is a video about Mr. Postman by BitCorp. It's another game by the same people who made Bobby is Going Home. And it's also not just about Mr. Postman, it's about a bunch of other games from BitCorp as well. I won't give it away, but it is still worse than E.T.
That's awesome. Okay.
So with worse than E.T., I pretty much have decided this is the next to last, this is the penultimate episode, is this Mr. Postman one. I had a lot more ready to go, but I think I'm going to finish it up with the next one.
And what's the next one? What's in the next one, just as a preview?
I'm not giving that away yet, okay. Jeff.
It's a company, or is it just one company, or a selection of just worse than E.T. games?
It's a summing up of the whole thing, Jeff.
Oh, okay. It's a summarization. Okay, so
there are some new bad games in there, though, too.
Okay. So my latest video about the Atari 8-bit has 9 budget games from Zeppelin that I didn't already cover in other videos. So you can tell people who don't watch your video, because they'll say, hey, you forgot this, when in the first 5 seconds of the video, I say what games I'm leaving out and why, and I show them.
I know.
So anyway, Zeppelin produced 19 games for the Atari 8-bit from 1988 through 1992. So they're like a late era Datasoft, or Synapse. A lot of stuff, and I would say that the one game I'll highlight here for two people would be Fantastic Soccer, because it's great for two people to play on an Atari 8-bit. It's a great soccer game. It's like Kickoff, but it's on the Atari 8-bit. There is a Kickoff for the Atari 8-bit. This is better than it. It's probably the best soccer game, like really good two-player game.
Very cool. I know I did watch the video. I actually really liked that one. I saw the comments that you're referring to, but you know what? That's how the internet is.
You know, it's fine. It's fine. It's because
not everybody has a chance to look at everything. Some people want to comment on stuff. That's fine. So the next video came out last week. It was for May the 4th for Star Wars Day. It was a new version of the Star Wars story about going to see the Star Wars characters at Toys R Us in 1977. This is a brand new version. That was the one that won the award from the Easy Reader that let me I could win $500 so I could go buy my Atari Centipede arcade one up. So
right.
That's what this.
So it's an award winning story.
Sure. Yeah.
It's an award winning story put to sure, video. Yeah. It is. It's an award winning story that allowed you to buy your Centipede one up arcade. There's a lot to unpack in there.
Yeah. There's a lot to unpack in there. Yeah, so that's that. And that was the last thing I did. And right now I'm working on, so like I said, my next one will be the final worse than E.T. video. And I'm working on it right now.
I have one more on here, but then I'll explain what my next video is after I do that. Cause my last ST video was the second set of run and gun platform shooters. These was numbers 40 to 31. I'm counting down from 50 to 1. My favorite game of this set, two games, Soldier of Light, which is an arcade conversion, and Narc, two really good just blasting games. In the next set, from 30 to 20, I'm doing that right now, and it's supposed to come out on Sunday. I don't know when this podcast/video podcast is coming out, so it may be coming out after. So it probably will already be up, because it'll probably come out Monday.
Well, like, I mean, these should come out on a specific day of the week. It just depends on what the timing that we have, right?
Probably. It depends on who's going to edit it. Okay. Here's our discussion topic.
So, yeah, the discussion topic this week is the boardroom table debate. I promise that we will never make the boardroom pun again after this episode. So speaking of bored, is it possible to be bored in 2024? Do you think the boredom of the 70s helped us get into video games and computers?
So okay, I'll the let 70s... you answer that. Sorry, what, Steve?
I'll let you answer first.
The 70s compared to now were incredibly boring. But inside, right? Inside. Outside, what's where all the excitement was? Inside, not as much of excitement. You know, you had a couple TV channels. We luckily got an Atari. We never had one until the 81. So the boredom of the 70s did help get us into video games and computers because we were very bored. But we did lots of outdoor stuff. And eventually, it gets to the point where, you know, the men and the boys get separated in outdoor stuff. Like, could we ride motorcycles anymore? Probably not. I wasn't good enough, right? You know, no. Could I play soccer anymore in high school or college? No, I wasn't good enough. So at that point, like, you got to kind of choose your battles. My battle was the computer, basically.
Sure, but I think the question here is not... So I like that idea. You're right. I mean, there was more to do outside. But even outside could get boring after a while.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. You do run out of things to do, although it was much more... There was much more to do outside than there is now, I think. Especially around the way houses are, even the way houses are constructed, you know,
here,
at least where we live, houses are constructed with less outdoor space. So there's less space to do things outside.
And all of the school playgrounds used to be open.
Yeah. And now every school playground here locked. Is locked. So there's, and in the area we live in, there's hardly any parks either. So the concept of kids playing outside has even kind of been, I mean, our generation apparently have decided that kids of the next generation shouldn't be playing outside, which is really bizarre to
me. Bizarre. And they actually complain. And I don't do this, but we'll complain that kids aren't playing outside, but they took away all the places for them to play.
Sure. And it's our fault. Well, maybe it's not all our fault. Maybe it's baby boomers' fault, not just Generation X. But my point is that, yeah, like it's, but the kids don't play outside, but they didn't make the rules. Like they didn't shut the playgrounds down.
Right. Right? Exactly.
They didn't make the video games that they play inside either. I mean, again, like people get mad at kids for the things they do, but kids don't have that much control. I mean, what did people get mad at us? Cause we watched HR Puff and stuff on TV. Well, we didn't, first of all, HR Puff stuff was horrific to
God
watch,
awful.
But it was good, but it was awful. Yeah. But at the same time, like it wasn't our fault. It was on TV. We didn't have anything to do with it. We didn't make it. It was just the thing that was there.
It was the only thing on channel 13 at 4:30. Right, like yeah. That was the cartoon channel or whatever.
So you can't be mad at kids because they're doing the things that have been provided to them, and especially around here, they can't go to the schoolyards. There's nowhere to go. So what would they be playing? Like we would get a ball and we would walk up to the school, and then we would kick the ball around or throw it, and then we go play ditch 'em in the hallways and all sorts of stuff. Now obviously the world has changed a little bit and people are scared of kids now,
yeah.
Right? For good, and
good reason, right? We weren't kids to be scared of. We were not kids to be scared of, but there were kids to be scared of back then.
Yeah, it's the same now. It's right. Just things have sort of accelerated to where there are reasons why these things happen, but you can't blame the kids themselves for the fact that they're not outside playing because right. that has not been afforded to them. But is it possible to be bored now? Because I think part of us being bored was that, you know, once you're sitting in your house and you've read all your choose your own adventure books and there's nothing on TV, like literally it's 12:30 in the afternoon and it's gone to soap operas and like news reports on PBS, like there's nothing.
You're talking about in the 70s and early 80s, right? Now.
Yes, okay. that I think and you've maybe it's raining. Like, I mean, maybe it is possible to be bored in the 70s because there was literally like nothing. There could be a time there's literally like nothing to do.
I would tell you that now, yeah, as opposed to now,
like you can find something new and interesting around every corner. Now, can that also be overwhelming?
Okay.
Sure.
I'll tell you the only time that boredom sets in with this, when you even have the luxury of whatever you have near you, like TV or video games or whatever it is, boredom only sets in for me when anxiety sets in. And that's if I'm depressed about something there's something going on that I can't control. And so none of the things that should relieve the boredom are relieving that anxiety. And this gets when you get older, right? That anxiety of whatever. It could be anything. Kids aren't home, whatever it is. There's that boredom that like you try, or if you have something bad that's happened that you can't get rid of, maybe there's been a loss in the family or something like that. That's when you can be bored, because nothing is solving that problem. Like none of these items, games are solving that problem.
What you're describing is depression.
Yeah.
You know, and here, put up the suicide hotline number right now.
Because
what you're describing is being the concept of nothing being interesting,
right?
Because you're depressed,
right?
And that is absolutely a case, but I wouldn't say that that's the same as boredom.
Okay, you're right. So I said that's the only time boredom sets in.
Yeah, I'd say that I think it is obviously possible to be bored now, but I think it's less possible based on the rules of the game. There's always something to do. Maybe the boredom sets in because there's too many things to do, or there's too many choices, or everything that there is not what you're interested in, and that could possibly be the case. So of course you could be bored now. I just think it's less. I think it's a different emotion.
I think the doom scroll through social media, the doom scroll through Netflix, and the doom scroll through your emulator full of every video game ever becomes that there's so much, I don't know what to do, I'm bored. You can't.
Well, and I think that's why I've been so, like when I had the Stella emulator and I had the Retron 77 and I had just every Atari 2600 game on the SD card and I could play whichever one I wanted, which basically led me to playing none of them.
None of them, right.
But the Atari 7800 Plus got me to break out my old cartridges,
right?
And I'm actually playing them again and actually enjoying them, or at least finding them interesting. And I think it's because I don't have the choice of anything. I could load up a SD card on my Atari 2600 or 7800, but if you just limit yourself and go, okay, now let me play what I have and let me go read the directions, because the other thing is a lot of those games are loose carts and you don't have the instructions. And just like I have made a whole thing about Airlock.
Right.
I'd not read the instructions yet. And it's a terrible game. But if you read the instructions, you know what you're supposed to do. But a lot of the cases, you've got these loose games and you don't read the instructions. You put them in, you're like, this is dumb. But if you really sit down and limit yourself to what you have, and then you go to Atari Age or Atari Mania and you read the instruction manual, you try to get into it, it actually can be really fun.
Right.
And it's sort of limit in that those limitations breed the interest and creativity. And it's kind of funny because back in the 80s, we would have said, oh, it's boring. We don't have access to all the games we have. And then here now in 2024, I'm talking about how having the limited amount of games actually is more interesting, which is sort of the exact opposite.
I'll tell you my version of that. I think it coincides. So when I'm making these Atari 8-bit or Atari ST videos, mostly let's talk about the ST ones, especially because they're like a very untapped source. I never went through every single Atari 8-bit game on an emulator and tried to play them all. I did that with the Kinhank. I went to every game I could find on there, downloaded all the information, played the games, took all the games that I liked and marked them as ones that I liked. I never went back to it. Never. But when I'm going through and creating these videos on like the 50 top run and gun games or whatever, I'm finding games that I should have seen when I did that. I don't remember them at all. Right. I'm reading the reviews and the instructions and playing them. And by God, it makes the games fun to play.
Well, I have a really good example of that, too. Like, I had read about the game Stellar Track for the 2600 for a long time. Stellar Track is a game that only came out from Sears.
Right.
You know, there were a few of those. There was like another one. There was like the Polo game, I think, was another one. There's a few. For the Atari 2600 that were only released by Sears. But Stellar Track is one of them. And I was listening to the Advent of Computing podcast, which is really good. If you don't listen to that, it's a good podcast.
Is that the one where the guy was doing Algol the other?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I love that podcast.
So he did. It's great. And he did one about Star Trek. And he did all the versions of Star Trek. And his point of that podcast was about the basic language. It was really good. It was like basic by means of writing the Star Trek game. And I was like, that's a really perfect way to talk about basic. But I was like, why didn't he talk about Stellar Trek of the 2600? And it's obvious because he was talking about basic. But I had heard that Stellar Trek was not good. So, but after listening to Advent and Computing, I'm like, let me go find Stellar Trek. So I went down to a local store and I found Stellar Trek, I don't know, for like $3 or something. And I put it in, and you know what? It's exactly like the game that he described Star Trek to be. And people didn't like it. I'm like, it's actually kind of fun to play. It's really, there's lots of directions.
Right.
You know, it's hard to play in the 2600 because of all the directions, but you know what? It is fun because if you sit down, you're like, oh, it's not going to be Star Raiders. It's going to be more of a slower experience, but you can feel like how someone, a programmer in the 70s, would build this game because they were fascinated by the mainframe computer game, and they wanted to see it on the 2600. Right. And so from that standpoint, it's really interesting. But in cases, it's because I have the 2600 Plus, because I'm interested now in going out and getting carts, because I could go find Stellar Trek at a retro game store, and because I could plug it in and go find the instructions online somewhere, that it actually makes it interesting. I mean, a lot of that is a lot of steps to make it fun, but it is still fun. And I'm doing that with a lot of the games for the 2600 now, just trying them out slower, at a slower pace, you know, trying to explore them. So,
I think getting what you like and exploring it in a measured pace and enjoying it, that will relieve the boredom. I think that will.
Yeah. I mean, it masks the depression sometimes too. So, but anyway, that's the weekly overscan. This one was probably a little disjointed and weird because we're just getting it off.
It's number one.
The ground.
I think number one needs to get into the can and up on video and audio, and then we work on number two, right?
Sure. We're trying to do it every week, which means we're trying to come up with a system to let us go quickly because we don't have a ton of time to do it and edit it. But hopefully we'll have one of these questions every week. If anybody actually listens to this, and if anybody wants to actually answer this boardroom debate,
Watches
it and wants to put your two cents into the boardroom debate, please do. Whether people can be bored in 2024, and what was boredom like in the 70s, please put your comments in. We did get some feedback. The feedback was in the the document I made, but they did not get into this presentation. So we'll do the feedback next time.
Okay. We'll do the feedback next time. We got some good stuff. We'll do the best feedback from the videos too, because sometimes we get really good things.
Yeah, I did that. That was in there.
Okay. We'll do that next time. All right. Well, until next time, Steve.
Into the overscan.
Into the overscan. Okay. Into the vertical blank overscan. This is still the vertical blank podcast. So into the overscan.
Oh, you're right.
Out of the overscan.
Out of the overscan.
Out of the overscan. Into the vertical blank.
Okay, out of the overscan and into the vertical blank. Is that what we're
saying? I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Okay, all right.
Into the vertical blank.
We were children of the Silicon Revolution, an X generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars. A product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full stroke keyboards, Jolt Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blank. There, we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.